Recording now. Welcome. My name's Marina Paul. I'm the host of the podcast series for Jungle called What Would You Do Differently? That we take business leaders with over 10 years of experience to reflect on an event or an experience that changed their lives. You will hear true stories and they will tell you a bit about the traffic accident, or maybe it was just a positive story. And then with the benefit of all their wisdom, tell you what they would do differently. Without any further ado, allow me to introduce our next speaker. I feel like I'm in a forum or a seminar, but Vanessa North, who is the founder of the boutique, but very clever, leadership, aspirational leadership training and coaching services. If you're interested in contacting Vanessa, we'll also put her details down below. But welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Marina.
Look at you being all serious now.
I'm smiling.
We should have recorded. Now, for those of you watching, not just listening, we're going to just post a little, like a little bounty. If you can guess what's behind Vanessa, that it was so important she had to blur it out.
I just thought it might have been a bit distracting.
I liked the piano you had before.
Well, I can try that later.
Try it later. All right, well, you're going to talk about, you know, big moments in your life where big career change has happened. So I think it's something that everyone gets to at some point in their career. So tell us about it.
Well, certainly. It's funny because I was thinking about this and my career has not followed a traditional trajectory. I kind of call it after a friend of mine had described as being like a spaghetti career. You know, there's all sorts of different strands that go in different directions but sometimes come back and overlap and so on. I have since learned that it's actually called a portfolio career now, which means, kind of gathering, lots of different skills and looking at how you might apply them in different settings. But anyway, I found myself after a number of different things working as a director of learning development at a very large government department, which I won't mention the name of, but needless to say, they're very compliance focused. Those of you in the audience might work out where it is. But
just don't mention anything.
Don't mention. No, then I might have to kill you. No, not seriously. But so in that role, that, you know, I had many different responsibilities. We had lots of changes of the sort of senior commissioners that we reported to. There was myself and a number of other directors around the country. And they also loved restructuring. Yeah. So if there's a problem, let's restructure. And so for a while there, even though that was kind of a bit uncomfortable, I kind of move into the new role with a new portfolio, new staff, some of whom were here in Adelaide and some of whom were around the country. You know, I jump into that with relish. I get to know the new people, the new work, whatever it is. So that can kind of be interesting. However, after a while, it becomes very wearing. But I'd managed to put together a project which did take off around the country. Initially, at first, there was a few people saying, well, that'll never work and, oh, you know, it'll take too much time and all those sorts of things, and probably a little bit typical of that organisation. But eventually we got it off the ground. And I had this fantastic deputy commissioner who was based here in the Adelaide office, who I got to know and who got to know me. And I don't think you can underestimate those kind of relationships that you can make when people are close, because I've got to say I was probably a lot more distant than the people that I reported to on a more day-to-day basis, who are based in Canberra and Melbourne or Brisbane or Sydney or whatever. But anyways, a fantastic guy, and I'll mention his name. His name's Shane Reardon, and he's got a bit to do with coaching football and things for youth and stuff now. But, you know, really a humble man, but also one who was really good at letting people have a go at things. So not recklessly, he wouldn't let you do anything. But if he thought, yeah, that idea's got merit, he would support it. So the idea was that we would hold a nationwide learning and development expo in this organisation. Now, at the time, I think this organisation is around about 30,000 people around the country, so it's big. And in each state, you know, we mostly offered face-to-face little workshops or seminars or, you know, whatever. Had some online stuff, but not a lot. So this is pretty ambitious, but I thought, you know what, we could do this. So a couple of my colleagues and I think also the assistant commissioners that I reported to kind of said, oh, well, maybe we should just do like a couple of days, you know. And I said, I reckon we can go bigger than that. So I said, how about a month? Oh, my goodness, they said, you know, oh, that would never work. Oh, what if nobody came? Or what if lots of people came? There was all these different kind of reasons about why we shouldn't do it. But Shane said, if that's what you want to do a month, go for it. So I did. So I got some part-time people who came over to help me with doing that. And I'm still doing my own director role at the same time. And we put together this fantastic kind of calendar of events. We had people that we were interviewing around the country, that we were streaming. We had fantastic thing that one person came up with in the digital space. She came up with a digital show bag. And if any of you have ever been to, you know, like the Easter shows or the Royal shows or whatever, you know, you get little samples of things, right? So she put up all this stuff in this format of a digital show bag, and each week added some more stuff to it, resources, articles, interviews, you know, all sorts of things. So we had thousands of people attend this, and over the month, it was a fantastic success, to the point that our team and myself who put it together actually won one of the organisation's awards for, you know, HR people stuff or whatever it was. So then I'm kind of on this high thinking, oh, this is fantastic, you know, this is great, yeah. Look at what else we might be able to do now. We've got a bit of momentum. But unfortunately what happened then was a new commissioner came in. Whilst he did bring in a lot of really good things, as traditionally happens, good old restructuring again, moving people around and so on, the person I was working with on this fantastic project in the Adelaide office decided to leave the organisation. And at that time, you know, a lot of people, including myself, were quite, devastated probably isn't an understatement, because he was such a great people person. And at the time, he was the head of the people department. People call it HR, but there's all sorts of other names, aren't there? You know, I can't remember. But we were called the name of the organisation, People. So he was like the head honcho, you know. So having him on your side was just a feeling that, you know, if you had some good ideas, they'd happen. However, when he left, that feeling went, and we kind of almost went a bit of a rebound, you know. Back to a bit more of a kind of keeping tight control of people and what they do and how they do it and when they do it. And I kind of been used to doing a number of different things and giving it a go anyway, even if I didn't sort of think, you know, total support was there, in the hope that it would have a good outcome and it would benefit people and it would be something that, you know, people would get on board with. But the new assistant commissioners were very conservative. And so I found myself in a position where I kind of was banging my head against a brick wall. I'm sure they were doing the same, thinking, who is this upstart in Adelaide? It keeps kind of, you know, going on about stuff. And so it was a really difficult position for me to be in, because I'm not kind of someone to just sort of sit back and just go with the flow. I'm always looking to do new things, and that's what keeps it interesting. So I was at a time in my life where I probably could say I was pretty miserable. I don't think my husband thanked me either. You know, he come home at night carrying on about all the horrible stuff that's going on and how nobody's, you know, wanting to give anyone a chance. Everybody's kind of keeping their heads down, and I found it kind of stifling. And I know from what subsequently happened as well, that some of the powers that be at the time were not happy well, they weren't happy with me, let's put it that way. And I certainly wasn't happy where I was and what I was doing. And I got to say, just when I was sort of talking about that restructuring, to just illustrate it, I had one of the assistant directors who I think was in the Adelaide office, who wasn't reporting to me at the time, but had at one stage, saying to me that she was on her, what was it now? What was it? She said she'd had her, I can't remember the actual numbers, but it was something like for the past 3 years, she'd had a new director every 3 months.
Wow.
So that's the scale of restructuring and change that I was talking about, you know. So if there was a problem, they just reorganised everybody. But you imagine, you just get used to somebody and the way they operate, and then in 3 months' time, you could do it all again, and then all again. So this went on for like 3 years. So
that's really wrecked. That's terrible. That organisation, you know, would have that frequency of restructure, because it costs so much time, money and effort to do it. A turn rate of 12 weeks? That's just silly.
Yeah, it was.
And all the people in there. Yeah.
A lot of people really suffered, you know, because you just kind of literally felt like you're a cog in the machine, because you kind of just get moved around from one to the other. And, of course, needless to say, most restructuring activities do not solve systemic problems. They just move them around. So, you know, one thing that's really important to me is to kind of be in a position where I feel like I'm making a difference, I'm making a contribution. And I've got to say, I probably got kind of ground down and a bit bitter and twisted. At this kind of time, I had to have some surgery on my spine, so it was fairly serious, but not too bad. But anyway, I spent a lot of time sitting around after this operation at home, thinking about stuff, and thinking, you know, if I left this organisation, you know, we'd lose our house. Like, it was that serious. I was thinking, oh God, you know, we had a son at a school, still paying school fees. We had this big house, which I absolutely loved, more storage than you could poke a stick at, swimming pool, big garden, lots of rooms, whatever. There was three of us and two little dogs, but even the two little dogs weren't using the gigantic garden, and I was the only one using the swimming pool. So as I'm sitting around there recovering from this surgery, I all of a sudden had this kind of thought, and the thought was, well, actually, rather than the worst thing being losing the house, if we sold that house and downsized, I'd never have to go back to that organisation ever again. So all of a sudden, in that time to think, you know, the worst possible outcome actually became the best possible outcome. So that's exactly what we did. We sold the house, downsized. And I still miss the pool, I gotta say, but I don't miss cleaning it. What that allowed me to do then was to actually, yeah, do some freelancing and sort of start my own business. So, you know, from what was an apparent, really difficult, messy and miserable kind of situation, it turned into probably the best decision I'd made in years, but in conjunction with my husband and son. But at the time, it was very difficult.
What would you do differently now with all this wisdom?
Yeah, and hindsight is such a fabulous teacher. With a bit more reflection, although it's difficult when you're in the midst of all that turmoil to really think straight. Mm. And so maybe, you know, having that time where I was recovering allowed me to think, you know what, let's look at a number of options. And I got to say, you know, at the time that I left, I didn't have a job to go to for the first time in my entire life. So that's pretty scary. However, I know we all have commitments and responsibilities and all those things, but I reckon if I had actually left when I was on a high. So left when that, you know, that deputy commissioner who was on my side had gone, or not long after, then I probably would have had a lot more energy and been far less miserable in terms of family life to actually, you know, get started doing something new. Now, you know, not everybody can do what I did, but I suppose my lesson in that is that at first it didn't look like I could do anything differently. It looked like this was my lot and I'm just going to have to put up with it, even though I was miserable, I was making my family miserable. But having that time to think about it, I should have left when I was on a high, not waited till now I'm kind of in this desperate situation. But, you know, clarity did eventually come. But I think that reflection and looking at options is probably a lot more important than I thought. So you kind of have those walls of, you know, I've got these commitments, I've got to stay here. And I hear so many people say the same thing. You know, I can't afford to leave. And I'm like, well, can you afford to stay? And I reckon if I had stayed, I don't think it would have been a good outcome if I'd stayed.
No, it's remarkable how many times, you know, people think in their career, this is the type of stories that keep coming up. So, you know, I had this situation, I should have acted quicker, or I should have, you know, blah, blah, blah. But there is, yours is that, but it also has this idea of being locked. Like you've sort of, for that little period of time while you're trying to, I guess, deal with this new style and the loss of the old style and that feeling of support, that you had also defeated yourself a bit by going, no, just for a moment, and then you snapped out of it. But that some people never snap out of that self-defeating cycle going, I need this house and therefore a part of this house, I need that job. You know, like those stories?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the one thing I love. When we spoke about this before, I was like, so many people are fixed mind, have this really, really fixed mindset about their life. Even when shit's going down, they don't go, oh, it's flexible. Like everything's flexible, man. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are always options. We don't always see them and we're not always looking for them. And, you know, before we did decide to sell the house, as I said, that was like my worst fear, is that we would lose this house. And as I said, I still pine for the storage and the swimming pool, but, you know, I got over it.
Just have less shit.
Yeah, but I think as well, you know, the whole point is I kind of felt, you know, yeah, things will get better. You know, I've got a new commissioner, we've got a new assistant commissioner, I've got another new assistant commissioner and another new assistant commissioner who are the ones that I was reporting directly to, and kind of keep thinking, oh, well, okay, you know, things will improve. But, of course, they didn't. And in a lot of ways, probably for me, got worse because I was getting worse. You know, I was miserable. I didn't feel like I could contribute. And, in fact, you know, without kind of telling tales out of school, you know, what the behaviour that seemed to get rewarded was the towing the line type behaviour. And I'm not that kind of a person, but in learning and development, you need to be creative. You need to be trying new things. You need to be looking for new things. And I think the culture of the organisation was such that it didn't necessarily encourage that. And I got to say that before I even took the job at this organisation, I had asked myself, could I work here? Like, because it is really compliance focused. So I tell a story where I sort of say, well, the answer is no, I can't, but it took me 9 years to find out.
God, you get a, oh, wow. That's slow learning. That's slow learning.
I should have left after six. And probably, you know, in a lot of other roles that I've had, I haven't stayed as long as 9 years. And it used to be that, you know, if you moved around a lot, you were considered to be kind of flighty and couldn't hold a job down. Nowadays, it's kind of expected. So I think in that time, sort of things changed a bit too, you know, that Probably 5 or 6 years. I should have gone. So that's what I regret, is that I didn't do it then, when I probably had a bit more get up and go left in me.
You've got loads of get up and go.
You've seen me before.
I sat out by the pool, by the torrents with you, and drank wine till everyone else had left.
We admired the rowers and the birds.
All right. Well, with that, I just want to say a massive thank you for sharing your story of that journey from, loving the job, loving the, being motivated. I think it's something everyone can really relate to, that commitment. And then something happens, in your case, a new leader. And then that floundering, that story that then goes on and rolls into your personal life. So thank you for being so open and sharing that with us.
You're welcome. And, great to talk with you.
As always. And for those of you who would like to know more about Vanessa, we will put her contact details, and you can also find her in the jungle as well. But if you want to learn more about her skills in coaching and creating aspirational leaders, reach out to her, find her on LinkedIn, tell her that you heard her story here.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
That sounds like an infomercial. On that note, we're going to go. Yes, steak knives, even for vegans. All right, I'm going to go.
See you, Marina. See you, everybody.
No.